It's On Second Thought from Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Virginia Prescott. Flannery O'Connor is regarded by many as Georgia's greatest fiction writer. Her dark humor, eccentric characters, and determined Catholic faith made her a leading voice in Southern Gothic literature. O'Connor was born in Savannah, but lived off and on at Andalusia, her family farm in Milledgeville, until her death at 39. Andalusia is now a museum. It's been under renovation since last year and reopens next week. Matt Davis is Georgia College's Director of Historic Museums, which includes Andalusia. Hello, Matt.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very well. Excited to talk about this. And Mary Lawrence Kinnickel is with us. She's an artist from Savannah and a close friend of the O'Connor family. Thanks for speaking with us, Mary Lawrence.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So, Matt, when did Flannery O'Connor live at Andalusia?
Following her diagnosis of lupus, Miss O'Connor lived at Andalusia from 1951 to her death on August 3rd, 1964. And during her time at the farm, this is where she wrote the bulk of her important stories and novels during her time on the property.
Andalusia is a very exotic name. Where did that come from?
It was inspired, actually, by the original name of the property in a very O'Connor-esque fashion. While riding on a bus in Atlanta, she happened to meet a previous owner of the property, as her family had originally called Andalusia Sorrel Farms, named from the horses that her uncle Bernard rode on the property, and found that the historic name was Andalusia, which he thought had a nice ring to it, so restored it to the grounds.
And Mary Lawrence, did you ever visit Andalusia?
I did in my childhood, and then also in 1979 and 80, I managed the property for Regina.
Huh. So how did you know Flannery O'Connor's family?
Both families were members of Sacred Heart Catholic Church. My father was a dentist and served that family and also the Hills and shot and other workers on the property, and so we were all connected in a variety of ways. My mother was an educator, of course. Flannery had gone to Peabody and then on to what is today Georgia College and State University, and my mother taught there and later became the alumni director.
So, Matt. Wanted to pick up with this idea of her family. I mean, you looked at this home. You must have spent a lot of time thinking about it. What kind of read did you get on Flannery O'Connor's family from that home?
It's a wonderful story, and I think it's one of not only faith but love and support. During the years in which Flannery was there following her diagnosis and illness, the world revolved around Flannery, particularly through the work and the support of her mother, Regine Cline O'Connor, who did everything to protect her daughter's health, encourage her writing, but also was a manager of a family farm. And these are issues that we're going to explore in great detail for visitors coming to the site.
So, Mary, did you see this place, Andalusia, come through in her stories?
I did. I also saw characters, as many Milledgevillians did, that were part of our everyday life and experience, whether it was someone being gored to death by a bull, which happened months before in a neighboring farm from the Nelligan farm. She was a fantastic storyteller, and so she could weave all of these happenings into her stories, her short stories, and also the two novels.
Well, one of the things that she's known for is these somewhat freakish characters that she creates, and she addressed that. This is in a 1960 essay called Some Aspects of the Grotesque in Southern Fiction. Here's Flannery O'Connor.
Whenever I'm asked why Southern writers particularly have a penchant for writing about freaks, I say it's because we are still able to recognize one. To be able to recognize a freak, you have to have some conception of the whole man. And in the South, the general conception of man is still theological.
So, Mary Lawrence, you said that some of the Milledgevillians might recognize themselves in her fiction. How did they respond to that?
Not well. You might throw a book across the room when they read it for the first time, or certainly express their concerns to Regina that, you know, she could have spent her time a little better. But We all delight in it. The names were always changed. That's all that really matters.
I guess that's what you need to do in a small town. However, she did. Here she is reading from the same essay, denying that everybody in Milledgeville was like this.
I'm always having it pointed out to me that life in Georgia is not at all the way I depict it. Those escaped criminals do not roam the roads exterminating families, nor Bible salesmen prowl about looking for girls with wooden legs. It's very hard to get it across that where you belong is with the writers of romance.
So not everybody is a Bible salesman prowling about looking for girls with wooden legs. Of course, a reference to her probably most famous story, A Good Man is Hard to Find. Matt, Flannery O'Connor has such a passionate following. People make pilgrimages to places like Milledgeville to understand her life. So what are they going to find there at Andalusia?
I think the visitor today, following the renovation work that's been done there, are going to be able to experience a landscape more true to the time that O'Connor was on the property. They will also get to explore rooms in a way that has not previously been allowed, such as entering O'Connor's bedroom and seeing some pieces such as the bookcases that were part of her prized possession and her original desk back into the property. And by adding objects like this to kind of give that true sense of space, it better connects people not only to the inspirations but the influences, but you can get a sense of what life truly was like at the property, which historic sites like this can't be replicated. That's the reason we come to them, to experience, to breathe the air, stand in the spots, and really understand the person.
Yeah, I understand it was a pretty humble home for the most part. So how do you approach a renovation for something like that, keeping it intact?
As responsible stewards of historic sites, our main goal is to follow the Secretary of the Interior standards for historic preservation. So we approach this in a way to preserve and maintain as much of the original fabric or building materials as possible. And our approach in this has been stabilization and repair. Repair and stabilized plaster walls. Through ample documentary and primary evidence, we were able to replicate historic colors. And a great deal of the original furnishings were there. We just have been able to add to that as well. So through some very sound historical research and a little detective work, I think we have brought back a product that a Flannery herself would know well.
So Mary Lawrence, you were there, your family, you were also a farming family, I believe. It was a working farm when you knew it, correct?
It was, and probably the one thing that visitors will enjoy is a pristine environment, which, because it was a working farm, it was never pristine. And there was always something to be done. There were cobwebs, and it was always tidy. But I have seen in the last 5 years that character and personality lost, and I look forward to seeing it come back.
How is it lost? What do you mean by that?
It was just cleaned up in a different sort of way. And possibly the footprint of a building may have been there, but it may have also been a bit changed if it became the stage for some kind of activity. It felt different. And furnishings and things had been moved around, and I'm delighted that Matt is bringing things back to try to create that sense of space in Flannery's bedroom, and, you know, hopefully bringing the piano back to the foyer and present the dining room as a dining room, as we always enjoyed it. I have no idea. I haven't been there.
Well, it's funny.
It does sound that he's Georgia College is being quite sensitive to the preservation of the actual, and I appreciate that.
It's funny because you imagine, you know, somebody living in their home. She's living with her mom. She has lupus. You know, this is declining years for her in many ways. For someone to walk into anyone's home and see it as it was, what do you think the O'Connor family would think of all these visitors tromping through their house?
Is that to me? I'm sorry.
Sure, pick it up.
I honestly think there would be a little bit of sense of amusement on Flannery's part about this, in a way. But I think from a greater family standpoint, I think that there is a sense of appreciation, and to echo what you're saying, that we're, in our current approach, being very sensitive to try to recreate that environment as close as possible to present a true picture of what the site looked like, and to arrange things in a way that a visitor to the farm at the time and a family and Flannery herself would recognize and enjoy. And for us, and as public historians and, if you will, custodians of these historic sites, that's our duty and our responsibility to give that true picture and reflection.
Well, of course, one of the things about Flannery O'Connor is that deep sense of place and southernness. Here she is. This is from the same essay that we're talking about from 1957, talking about how a southerner's sense of place affects her writing.
The Southern writer can't escape the image of the South that has built up a life of its own in his senses, any more than the Catholic can escape the indelible marks that the sacraments put on his soul. The Southerner's sense of place is usually as unadjustable as the believing Catholic sense of right and wrong.
The Catholic sense of right and wrong, such a deep part of the writing of Flannery O'Connor. Now, Mary Lawrence, your family were also Catholics, very close to the O'Connor family. What did that faith mean to her writing? How did she bring it forward?
I think in presenting the opportunity for redemption, even, you know, as she wove such violence and her dark humor through and the irony through her work. But there's always that opportunity for sanctification. There's always the opportunity for change. And usually the individuals are too close to the matter to recognize that. But I think, too, it was a time people need to remember when it was the Bible Belt.
Right.
And although you may not have had people walking around with a Bible in their hand trying to sell on that, it was a difficult time to be Catholic. There were times when in my school setting, I was with the authority figures, the teachers, the student aides from Georgia College. I wasn't allowed to play whatever game it was where people were touching because I was Catholic. You know, there was a lot of ignorance. They didn't believe we were Christian, that we rather idolized statues and our God was a woman. And so they essentially, as even I was brought up, and I'm sure that Flannery went through the same, to model behavior, educating people, but the most you could do was pray for them when they thought you had cooties or something. You know, we during the 60s, there was even a country club established, and certainly they came wanting my father to assist in the financing, but we were Catholic. So there was tremendous conversation. You know, there were certain people not being included, Catholics and the African-American individuals. And all of that has changed. Milledgeville has come so far, but it also was a time when even the Central State Hospital, if
Mary Lawrence Kinnickel, sorry, we're up against a break.
I really
appreciate you being here. Mary Lawrence Kinnickel, an artist living in Savannah, a friend of the O'Connor family, of course, of Flannery O'Connor. Thank you. And Matt Davis, Georgia College Director of Museums, and Flannery O'Connor's home in Milledgeville. Milledgeville is one of those museums. It's going to open to the public next week, June 19th. More at gpbnews.org.